It's my pleasure to chat with Dr. Martin Kohldorf, PhD, professor, Harvard Medicine. Professor, thank you for doing this. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
My listeners wanted me to tell you, and I wanted to tell you, thank you for the great Barrington Declaration. This is so important in our society. And I wonder if you would share with us how this came together, that such robust, well-respected scientists got together to say, we need to stop the lockdowns.
Well, there are many of us who work with the infectious disease immunology that has been trying to get this message out for a long time, since the spring. And we thought that maybe it would be more effective if the three of us came together and did it together, because it's easier to dismiss a single person than to dismiss three people.
Yeah. I've studied COVID-19, the coronavirus, now for 32 hours a week for 7 months, and I can never get to your academic level, obviously. But one thing I know is media, and I was so upset today to see CNN, and I do the radio show for Seattle, calling you guys maverick scientists. And it's my understanding that the lockdown itself is a departure from science, or the best practices in science. Is that correct?
Yeah, so lockdown is it's a terrible experiment, I think. If we go back before the pandemic, what we are proposing is what was in all the pandemic preparedness plans that different countries had prepared. And I haven't done a formal survey, but among my colleagues that I talk to that are infectious disease epidemiologists, the majority, not 100%, but the majority are in favor of this focused protection that we are proposing. So I don't see it as something maverick at all, more like stating what's established public health practice.
I am equally disturbed, Dr. Kohldorf. Do you like to be professor or doctor when you're interviewed? You have so many titles. I'll have to choose one, I guess. But which do you prefer?
I like when people call me by my first name, Martin.
All right. I'll do that. Thank you, Martin. That's very gracious of you. That I have seen the media, members of the media, news programmers, and in fact, President Obama's former Surgeon General, rebranding herd immunity as he called it a herd mentality. I listened this morning to the gentleman who runs the World Health Organization saying that herd immunity can only be achieved, Martin, by keeping people away from the virus. And this runs counter to my understanding. And I think herd immunity is important to what you're doing in this focused care of caring for the most vulnerable. So let's talk about those range of issues. Is herd immunity some weird theory?
No, it's sort of stunning as a scientist to see people talk about herd immunity in this way, because herd immunity is a well-established scientific fact, a phenomena that we know exists for infectious diseases, and every epidemiologist will acknowledge that it does exist. So it's like gravity. It's a fact in physics.
Yeah.
And to talk about herd immunity strategy doesn't make sense, because whatever strategy we use for COVID-19, we will eventually end up with herd immunity sooner or later. So it's like two airplane pilots sitting up in the airplane, up in the air, discussing, well, should we use the gravity strategy to land the plane or not? It doesn't make any sense. The plane is going to get down to the ground sooner or later, no matter what they do. But the purpose is to land the plane with as few casualties as possible. And with COVID-19, the purpose is that we need to get through this pandemic with as few death as possible. That's the purpose.
Yeah.
We might minimize the death. And that's what we propose, this focused protection, because that's what will minimize the mortality.
And the focused protection, let's talk about that. That is focusing on people who are truly at risk. And my understanding, Martin, is that these are people at least above the age of 70 with, it's my understanding that people who pass away with or from this virus have three comorbid factors very commonly. Are these the people that you focus on and that the Barrington Declaration calls on to provide the most focused care and protection to?
They are included, but it's broader than that. We all know that COVID-19 is riskier for the older. Now, everybody can be infected. So it's not a difference in the risk of being infected. That's fairly equal, I think, across the ages, and no big differences. So the difference in risk is in mortality or dying from it. And it's not just a twofold or a fourfold or a tenfold. It's not even a hundredfold difference in risk. The difference in risk between the oldest and the youngest is more than a thousandfold. There's an enormous difference in risk for mortality. And among older people, COVID-19 is more serious than an annual influenza. Every year, a lot of old people die from the influenza, but COVID-19 is worse than that, much more worse. On the other hand, for children, every year about 200 to 1,000 children in the U.S. die from the influenza, depending on if it's a bad influenza season or not. But that's more than for COVID-19. So for children, COVID-19 is less risky and a milder disease. So that's what we have to utilize. And of course, those in the 70s and 80s are at higher risk, at the highest risk. And if you have comorbidities, if you're frail, it's even worse. But also people in the 60s are fairly high risk, while people below 50 are at low risk.
I want to bridge back over to my area of expertise. One of them is media. And Martin, you and your colleagues, I want to make sure that we talk about your colleagues who helped found and create the Barrington Declaration. I've heard Professor Gupta explain that she can't get papers published that discuss T cell immunity and crossover immunity. That's chilling to me. And I heard you say that as well-respected as you three of you are in the world of epidemiology, that you couldn't get a witness in the media to get your word out. This is not an epidemiological question. This is a societal question. I find this chilling, Martin, and worrying. Are you guys surprised that you couldn't get witness and surprised that Professor Gupta's had problems getting papers published all of a sudden?
I think it's stunning because the three of us, we all come from reasonably respectable universities, I think.
Yes.
And back in the spring, I tried to publish these thoughts, and I had no success in the American media, whether the lay, sort of the regular layperson media, nor in the scientific media. I'm a native of Sweden, and in Sweden, I had no problems publishing. So I published three op-eds in the major daily newspapers there. So that wasn't a problem. But in the U.S., it turned out to be impossible for me. Until about a month ago, things started to change.
Yeah, and I'm very thankful. I've seen your piece in Spiked, which is a very important publication, LinkedIn piece you wrote, The Spectator, all excellent pieces. I'm of the position with my audience, Martin, that the word cases is an empty scare word. And I liken it this way. If I were to say that there have been 200,000 mechanical incidents with the 737 airplane this month, you probably wouldn't fly one. And if I said, but 90, and you'll get the number I'm using here, 99.73 or 87% of these were the toilets, the speakers in the stereos. It didn't involve anything safety oriented. You would reconsider. In what does a case mean? I mean, what is a case?
That's a great analogy. It used to be that a case was somebody who was sick. Yeah. And if you are sick of COVID-19 and you have to go to the hospital, then you're a case. But defining cases as somebody who is asymptomatic and has a positive PCR test doesn't make any sense for me. And I've talked to physician colleagues, and it doesn't make sense to them.
It makes sense to me from a perspective of media. It's a big number, and it's an impressive number. And I wanted to talk to you about this asymptomatic phenomenon with the PCR cycles, the COVID. And the PCR cycle testing, I'm at a loss as to understand how the 40-cycle PCR test is viable. It's my understanding that you are magnifying the genetic material, Martin. Is it correct to say, someone told me, a trillion times so that you can find a shred of incomplete genetic material? Is that true?
So it's interesting how the cycle times of PCR test is now common knowledge in this world, which it wasn't a year ago. But if with any test, there will be false positives and false negatives. So if you mass test college students that are asymptomatic, you're going to have some false positives for whatever reasons. And you're basically going to isolate the quarantine a lot of students who are not sick and who are not pose risk to others. So in my view, there's no public health reason at all to do testing among college students or school children unless they are so sick that they go to the hospital. Then you have to test them because you have to know what treatment you're going to give them. Do they have COVID-19 or not? But to test just asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic, there's no public health reason to do that. There is reason to test the nursing home staff, for example, because you don't want this to get into the nursing homes. So unless the nursing home staff is already immune, you want to do frequent testing of them. You also want to test visitors to nursing home because they're not only risking the life of the loved ones, but also other people in the nursing home. So their testing is very important. And to me, there is better to be more safe than sorry. So a false positive is not a huge issue because it means they have to visit their grandmother 3 weeks later. On the other hand, a false negative could have dire consequences. So in that setting, you have to be sort of have a threshold that makes you more safe than sorry. But then to use that same threshold for school kids is nonsensical, and I don't think you should test school children at all. If a school, if a child is sick, they have a cough or running nose, let them stay home. Doesn't matter if it's COVID-19 or not. If they are asymptomatic, they should be in school and learn what they need to learn.
Is it a correct understanding, and Martin Koldorf's with us, PhD professor, Harvard Medical School, as he said, a reasonably well-respected medical school, as are your colleagues, Oxford, et cetera. Professor, is it a fair thing to say that if young people get back on with their lives, we're not just helping society, because I want to talk about the lives lost, I think, due to the lockdown, but are we also not reducing the places that the virus can live? Isn't that one of the roles of herd immunity and younger people, that we take away places the virus can live in sort of as it lies in wait for an older person or a sicker person?
Yeah, so there are two problems with the lockdown. One is all the collateral damage. And there's collateral damage for public health, worse cardiovascular disease outcomes, plummeting vaccination rates. Cancers are not detected, so somebody who would have lived for maybe 15, 20 years will maybe die now in 3 to 4 years. So we won't see that in the mortality statistics this year, but this is something we're going to have to live with for a long time. A big problem is the mental health issues, both for the young and the old. So there's all that collateral damage. But even if we put that aside and we only look at COVID-19, what it does is it pushes things in the forward. So if you're an old person, 74 years old, say, you have to be very careful and take precautions and not mingle with people too much. But if we do the lockdown, we're pushing things in the future. So the amount of time that the older people have to do this, protect themselves, is going to be long. It's going to be over a year now, and it could be even more than that. And the longer time they have to self-isolate, the more difficult it is, both in terms of their own social life and mental health being, but also just protecting them from COVID-19, because at some point they're going to have to go to the doctor or the dentist. So the longer we drag it out, the more difficult it is to protect the elderly, high-risk people in the population.
Yeah.
So by young people protecting themselves from the disease, they're making a disservice by doing so.
fascinating. And Doctor, I've read an analysis from you and I have a common friend, a friend in common, Dr. Martin Koldos with us, Harvard University, the Barrington Declaration, one of the founders there, one of the three founders. We have some friends in common who are independent data analysts, Justin Hart with Rational Grounds. I had met one of your colleagues, Dr. Atlas, in March of this year. And then I work with a gentleman, he goes on Twitter by the title of Ethical Skeptic. I know who he is. He's a naval intelligence officer, independent data analyst. And it's really fun because he does this data analyst, doctor. And then Martin, he opens this up for peer review. Right, here's my source material. Here's my mathematical assumptions. He contends that we are going to see a hundredfold loss of life years from the lockdown. Life years, you mentioned the younger people may die sooner. He has also analyzed that he feels like right now that we may be losing more people from the lockdown than from COVID itself. Does that sound out of proportion to you, or what are your observations as where we sit today with that loss of life?
I think it's huge and terrifying with the negative consequences of the lockdown, the collateral damage. Some of it is sort of already occurring, but a lot of it is going to have long-term consequences. So we won't see it in the mortality statistics until later on.
Yeah.
So, and how to quantify it is, of course, difficult. We can quantify maybe... It's even difficult to quantify as the effect on cancer, for example, but to do it across all health aspects is very difficult. But for sure, it's tragic and scary. And the longer the lockdown continues, the worse it's going to be. And you mentioned, for example, Scott Atlas, who have been who have met. And what we're saying in the Great Barrington Declaration is nothing novel or new. These are things that many of us have said for a long time, including Dr. Atlas since the spring. So he is one other person who has been trying to get this message out. And I was very excited when he was hired to join the White House to sort of help there from the inside. So that was a very positive development in my view.
I have this observation as we close out. You've been so kind with your time. This is where I find myself deeply concerned as someone who has taken a deep dive in learning this tiny little bit of what you know in your profession. And I wish I knew I could have like studied epidemiology. It is absolutely fascinating.
It is.
B, I'm glad that people are studying it. I'm so thankful for the Barrington Declaration. I do a bit of pattern recognition. I'm very concerned because I really observed that there was sort of pre-COVID-19 science, which was evidentiary based and based on observable, testable, measurable, falsifiable. And then I feel like post-COVID-19, there's been a departure from this, that I'd seen the World Health Organization caution against lockdowns in the case of a SARS-type respiratory viruses. Dr. Fauci had cautioned against, or members of his team had. I feel like all of a sudden there was this departure from scientific rigor. Is that a layman's misunderstanding or
scientific for consensus for something that I did not agree with? And me feeling that I knew a lot, having worked with infectious disease outbreaks for a couple of decades, and it didn't make sense to me. I didn't agree with it. So that was sort of a stunning experience. And then when I tried to, humbly say that what I thought it wasn't interesting to hear what I had to say, but that has changed now. So I'm very very appreciative of that. And there has, from the beginning, been certain media outlets that have been more open-minded, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I am so thankful for the Barrington Declaration. We're going to link to it. We'll make sure we get as many professionals and lay people signing it as possible. Professor, I thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for speaking out, and thank you for restoring my trust in scientists. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful to talk with you.
Me too. Okay, so I've gone from feeling assaulted by disinformation today to being amused. I'll tell you why I'm being amused. So I promise, man, we've done a lot today. We've done the vote fraud stuff, Sidney Powell. We've done an update on what went on in Pennsylvania. We've done the military study proving lockdowns don't work. We've done the head of the Alberta Surgeons and Doctors Association, the government body that heads them, saying that the COVID is the biggest hoax perpetrated on people ever. And he blames the media and politicians for that. We've done a lot. Then during the show, the long-awaited Danish mask study came out. And let me tell you why I'm feeling giddy now. Obviously, the study shows that masks don't work because, well, you know, they don't work because they can't work because there's the physics. Because the physics are not changing because they're woke. You don't get to go to the physics and say, you are now woke physics, so you're one tenth of 1% of a micron. That size of a virus is all of a sudden bigger than 0.3 micron. It's not. Alex Berenson, who we've had on the show. Alex is a former New York Times reporter. He's written two books, The Unreported Truths About COVID. We had him on the show. He's been brilliant at tracking COVID lies. Alex may press libel charges against a wokester doctor who accused him of lying about masks and of getting people killed. And she's a liberal wokerati who uses her, you know, medical degree, as in my opinion, as a cudgel against people. And I just tweeted Alex saying, is this going to affect your libel cause? And he came back and said on Twitter, only one way to find out. I take that to mean the way to find out is, I said, this is going to aid your cause. I guess only one way to find out is to go do it. So maybe I'm feeling giddy now because there is a sign that, people are going to have to pay for these lies. Because people are going to have to start to pay for these lies. This is the biggest question mark that hangs over our republic. What's the cost? If you went to your employer, I mean, just imagine an HR meeting. Okay, hey, listen, the reason I do this, by the way, it's not to pretend that we're all as important as the country. I mean, there's the country, then there's humanity, and then there's obviously God. It's to take this down out of the political sphere. Let's get grounded in another fact. Let's run through this together. If you had an HR meeting, so that, you know, you get the, you know, those fun notes from HR like at noon on Friday. Hey, can you pop up? And you sit down with HR. Let's say that your HR director says, you submitted a report to management that said that one of our executives was embezzling funds. And you say, yes, I submitted that report. Where did you get the information to make that accusation? And you said, from a guy he fired. You got it from Fred? Yeah. Do you know that Fred was fired for embezzlement? Yeah, I know that. Did you check the information Fred gave you? No. Did you know that Fred got it from Casey, who got fired for stealing petty cash? Yes. And you wrote a report with that information and gave it to us and put your stamp of approval on it. In fact, you presented it to us as if you wrote it and researched it. Is that right? Yes, that's right. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up. We'll see you Monday. I'm not fired. Why? All you did is lie to us. Is that what would unfold? You work at Boeing? Friends who work at Boeing are in the Boeing ecosystem. If you were called into a meeting and you walked in and there is an FAA investigator, and let's say someone from Fatigue Mechanic Research, I forget that place in South Center that looks at airplane safety. And you walked in and said, "Hey guys, how's it going? Doug, got a question for you. You'd said that this aluminum alloy skin was safe at 900 degrees. Did you have any studies that showed that?" "Well, it should work." "It doesn't work. People have been putting that alloy on the planes and the engines are burning up and people died." "Whoa, dude, am I fired?" "Well, no, but don't do it again." What's the cost? What's the cost for the mask lies? What's the cost for the FISA lies? Why are we assuming there's no lies in the voting? Well, we're not. Why are we being told to? We'll come back with an incredible moment in radio. The first time I have ever turned just a few more things, the selection of the stories and the audio, over to a producer. Alex has earned this opportunity. You'll have an opportunity to rate his work next on the Todd Herman Show after we check traffic. Hey, this is going to be a double big, double whammy, give it a shot, jump off into the off the precipice, into the open air. In, as Tom Petty would say, God rest him, into the great wide open, past the fentanyl. That's sad. He was a great songwriter and always seemed stoned. And I think that's sad. Like, I saw him on David Letterman once. I thought, I'm going to hear, like, the rock star philosopher. "Dave, I've always said the waiting is the hardest part, man, because you're just so baked and you don't want to wait." Wow. Very sad. All right. This is an auspicious moment. I've never done this. I let young Alex Overall, the producer of the show, 20 years old, a man in full, a great, great, great producer. Nearly 99.9% flawless in the show. Comes from a great family, great Christian home. Just wonderful person. Got a chance to do just a few more things completely. So everything you're going to hear, picked by Alex. Now, here's what makes it doubly interesting, is my computer, because I am piped into the radio station computer, manipulating it from here. It has a massive delay on it, like a 75-second delay. And each audio clip is like 10 seconds long. So we'll see how this goes. So it might be that young Alex may have to perform just a few more things. And Alex, I'm not certain. Do fill-in hosts even try that?
No, we've never had a fill-in host perform just a few more things.
Do they ever do my benchmarks? Does anyone ever have respect enough for my show to do the benchmarks?
No, I think they have too much respect for your show to do your benchmarks.
All right. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's a quick arrangement of news-like items laid out into a logical and sequentially ordered list.
Just a few more things.
And that's what we call it. I did mention that they're numbered, and the first number, I'm waiting for it to load, and there it was, and now it'll come back. And so we do number the items.
Thing one.
This is, and I'm quoting Alex here, I'm quoting him, Freudian slip. During the handoff to his show, CNN's Chris Frido Cuomo admits We do the job based on who's in what?
Here over Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
State TV's got some new competition, Anderson. It's going to be very interesting to see how the narrative unfolds. You know, for people like us, we do the job based on who's in power.
Wow. So they call Fox State TV. Wow. But they do the job based on who's in power. But they're not state TV. So far, Alex is doing really well with just a few more.
Thing two.
We do number the items. All right, so you can give feedback on the text line, 800-465-8770 on Twitter. How is Alex doing in selecting these? And how am I doing in vamping and buying time between the clips as I wait for my computer? Thing number two.
You know, when you say remember them, I say remember them. They say, oh, he's targeting us. Yeah, you are being targeted. But not because you're victims, because you're victimizing the rest of us. And people must remember and hold you to account.
Remember when Sarah Palin, you remember the map where there was a, you know, a target on a congressional district, and then a crazy lunatic leftist went and shot a congresswoman there, and CNN said, oh, this is Sarah Palin's work. This is all Palin. She caused all of this. That was targeting. Well, now Chris Cuomo said, oh, yeah, sure, we're targeting you. And he's proud of that. Oh, yeah, we're targeting because that's what we do. But they're not state media. Don't worry. They're the reliable. This is CNN. Man, I wish, you know what? I should take a video of what I'm doing to this computer. Alex, are you watching this?
I can't see what you're doing.
Okay, look. If Dominion has gotten into the Just a Few More Things computer and there's a problem there, we may have been hacked, Alex. There's a possibility that, you know what? I'm pretty sure that the Biden campaign is in on this, that we've got Dominion software running on this machine. Next up in just a few more things.
Thing three.
This is post-election, of course. Representative Sparnberger is talking to the House Dems about, hey, listen, it's time for the country to come together. Let's stop all the scary rhetoric. And let's hide who we are from the American people.
Socialism ever again. Because while people think it doesn't matter, it does matter. And we lost good members because of that. We look at torn apart in 2022.
What this means is, why are you telling the people who you are? What are you, Chris Cuomo, going to come out and admit that your coverage changes based upon who's in power? What are you going to admit that you're targeting Republicans for a limit? What are you doing? Don't tell the truth about who you are. Didn't you ever go on a Tinder date? You got to show up and act like you always wear underwear and socks. Don't be itching at them like, oh, what's wrong? Oh, I'm not used to wearing underwear and socks and it hurts. Don't do that on a Tinder date. Everybody knows if you wear like the undergarments and socks on a date because you don't normally do that, you got to practice for a couple days. Practice like you're used to socks and underwear. Look, I don't even date. I'm a married man. I've been for 30 years. Even I know that you want to put on your best face. Don't go around saying socialism. Democrats, what are you thinking? Next stop in just a few more things.
Thing four.
Don't go around. If you're the Smartmatic CEO, Antonio Mugisa, in a clip, Alex, overall producer of the show, found he's programmed all Just a Few More Things today. Don't go around in 2017 talking about an estimated 1 million votes in the Venezuelan elections were fraudulent. Don't let that video exist and be found where you're saying, no, there's no fraud. And then, but 3 years ago, there was 1 million fraudulent votes.
We estimate the difference between the actual participation and the one announced by the authorities is at least 1 million votes. This would not have occurred if the auditors of all political parties had been present at every stage of the election.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Did he say if the auditors of every political party had been present? Pick me. Like in Pennsylvania? Like then? Like at that time? where the so-called Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has said, no, listen, we don't need the political, the ballot observers from every party to be able to see the ballot. We need you to be able to observe the fact that there are ballots in the room. You could do that from 125 feet away. I'm the Supreme Court Justice of Pennsylvania. Man, I hope I didn't just besmirch our listeners in Philadelphia. I was thinking, wait, Mike Ditka's from Chicago. I need a Philadelphia voice. Can someone please send me an example of a like prototypical Philadelphian voice? Because I think I just probably, I think I slurred people. Apologize. Next up, and just a few more things.
Thing five.
Another throwback in the Just a Few More Things created by Alex and reformatted by a slow computer. So these are liberals, and they're freaking out about something. It's, oh, yeah. Yeah. The ACB and a howler mode. What? Alex, what's going on there? What's happening? Explain it to the people.
What you're hearing is three different videos of liberal women freaking out about Amy Coney Barrett, and then there's a howler monkey thrown in there, and you can't really tell the difference.
So three are women having a fit because Amy Coney Barrett... And then, so basically what Alex, you're doing is comparing those liberal women to howler monkeys. That's what you did.
I mean, I didn't draw that comparison. I found the video that drew that comparison.
All right. So you're just surfacing it for news.
For the people.
Sake. It's newsworthy. Okay. We do program for the people, not the powerful. All right. Give us your feedback on how Alex did on Twitter. It's a pass or a fail, but you have to have an explanation, what you liked, didn't like, and we'll get to that. Todd Herman's show will continue.